were sitting in this particular chair shined right in his face and was rather problematic. So we temporarily this year are going to run with this little camera stand. So it makes it a little easier for whoever's chairing the meeting to be able to watch the committee members when they're trying to ask a question or ask for an at-ease or what have you. So you'll just have to excuse that. We're going to do some modifications of this floor, this end of this floor, during the next interim and change some offices, and we will solve this problem. So, again, we don't lose the historic feel of this old courthouse. Because from time to time, we do have visitors that were actually in this room, when it was a courthouse, looking at the federal judge. So it's interesting. But anyway, with us today from the Department of Revenue, we have Joanna Bales, Deputy Director of the Tax Division. And we also have Jerry Burnett. Is he in the room yet? Well, if he's not in the room, he won't be far. And with that, I'd like to have Joanna Bales come forward and start her presentation after she introduces herself and tells us who she represents. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division, which is a division within the Department of Revenue. And as such, we are responsible to administer pretty much all the tax types levied by the state, including the new commercial passenger vessel excise tax.
Could you please pull the microphone closer? I have a difficult time in hearing your voice.
Okay, well, I'd like to get started here. We'll give you an overview of what's happened. As the chairman stated, we do have one full cruise ship season behind us, and I'm going to attempt to explain the way this initiative works. There are some confusing aspects of it, so I'll do my best. Feel free to ask questions along the way if I need to clarify anything as I go forward. What I'd like to do first is just give a quick overview of what the initiative did. There were some revenue provisions as well as other provisions that aren't revenue related. I, of course, am going to focus on the revenue provisions. What the initiative did, and it became effective on December 17th of 2006, it imposes a $46 commercial passenger vessel excise tax on passengers traveling on large cruise ships, and those are cruise ships with over 250 berths. It also levies a tax on the owner or operator of the cruise ship who conducts gambling activities in Alaska waters. That tax is 33% of the adjusted gross income of those gambling activities. It subjects cruise ship companies to Alaska's corporate net income tax. Although they've been corporations for years and have traveled throughout Alaska waters, they have been exempt from Alaska's corporate income tax until this initiative passed. In addition, there is a $4 fee per passenger berth fee to cover the cost of the new Ocean Ranger program, which DEC will touch on during this hearing. There were some other provisions, and I don't pretend to be an expert in any way, shape, or form on these, but so I'll just quickly identify what those were. Department of Revenue is not responsible to enforce any of these provisions. But cruise ship operators are now required to gather and report more information and get a new type of permit for sewage, gray water, or other wastewater before they discharge that into state marine waters. It authorizes citizen lawsuits against an owner and operator if for any alleged violation of the initiative or a permit condition, and enables a person who provides information leading to enforcement of a law to receive 20 to 50% of any fines imposed, and it imposes additional requirements about disclosures regarding the on-ship promotions. Again, Department of Revenue doesn't administer these. I believe that it's a combination of the Department of Community and Economic Development and Department of Environmental Conservation that are responsible for these provisions in the initiative. I get a lot of questions from people. They ask me, you know, it's $50 head tax, is that what it is? So, but basically what it, from what I just explained in the initiative, there's a $46 per person head tax, which is what it's normally referred to, but it's a commercial passenger vessel excise tax, and then the $4 Ocean Ranger fee. That's where the $50 comes from. The $46 excise tax is administered by DOR. DEC collects the $4 Ocean Ranger fee. Now, as I said, the Department of Revenue is responsible for various aspects of this initiative. The first is the collection of the corporate income tax. Now that the cruise ships are now responsible to pay that. The cruise ship gambling tax, the commercial passenger vessel excise tax, which we refer to as the CVP tax. And then we're also required to account for those collections and disperse that money as directed by the legislature. And then we also are in the process of or have drafted regulations for the provisions in the initiative. As far as the corporate income tax goes, and I don't know if many are aware of the history of what's happened there, but basically all corporations are subject to the corporate income tax, but because of a federal provision, foreign flagged vessels have been exempt from Alaska's corporate income tax. The initiative changed that, so now those vessels, if they're corporations, are subject to the corporate income tax. The money that is collected is deposited into the general fund. We have no current estimate of revenues that we expect to collect, and the reason for that is that this is an industry for which we have no historical knowledge. They've never been a taxpayer under any tax type, and we just don't have reports or tax returns or any information that would allow us to make a viable estimate. The first tax returns from these companies are due on April 15th of this year, just like every other corporation. At that time, we expect to then be able to estimate what types of revenues will be received from the corporate income tax from the cruise ship industry. But until then, as I've said, it's very difficult to make an estimate. There's no provision in the initiative for revenue sharing. As I said, all the money goes into the general fund, just like all other corporate income taxpayers. We did draft some regulations dealing with water transportation companies. Those regulations were effective in October of 2007. The second part of the initiative as far as for the revenue raising is the 33% cruise ship gambling tax. We did draft some proposed regulations. They went out for public comment almost 2 months ago. That comment period ends February 7th. We hope to have the final regulations in place sometime in April. The regulations that we drafted identify, or focus, I should say, on the administrative portions of this tax. For example, who must file, when to file, where to file, that type of thing. We are currently developing the tax return form, but that we can't provide that form until the regulations are finalized. The way this tax works is that it is imposed on the adjusted gross income received from gambling activities which are conducted in state waters. What that means is the cruise ships are going to have to do an allocation method because during a voyage, gambling activities take place both within the state waters and outside state waters, and they'll have to do some sort of allocation to show the income that they received while they were in Alaska waters. Per the initiative, adjusted gross income is defined as gross gambling proceeds less any prizes paid, and then they can also exclude any other taxes that they had to pay on that gambling income if there was a federal or municipal tax that was imposed. We're not aware of any federal or municipal taxes imposed on that gambling income. So at this point in time, the adjusted gross income would be gambling proceeds, less prizes paid, and then the tax would be 33% of that. As the regulations were drafted, this will be an annual return. The first returns will be due April 15th. So again, as with the corporate income tax, we have no estimate of how much revenue we think the state will get, primarily because we have no history of this industry, so it's difficult for us to tell. So we will have some estimates in April of this year. Now this, unlike the corporate income tax, this revenue is deposited into a new tax account, which is an account, a sub-account of the general fund called the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. The third and probably the tax type that's had the most focus, and in fact we've been able to make estimates, is the Commercial Passenger Vessel Excise Tax, or the head tax, which is $46 per person. It is levied on the cruise ship passenger, and it's levied per voyage. So if I take three voyages during the year, I'd have to pay the tax three times. The cruise ship owner or operator is required to collect that tax from the passenger and then remit it to the Department of Revenue. They have to file a return with us, and that return and the remittance of the tax is due by the end of the month following the month in which the voyage took place. So if a voyage takes place in May, it starts in May, ends in May. The tax return and the tax is required to be remitted to the Department of Revenue by June 30th. Under the initiative, a voyage is defined as any trip that lasts longer than 72 hours. So it's only those voyages for which the tax is required to be paid. So if you take a cruise that lasts less than 72 hours, this tax does not is not levied on that particular voyage. And then as part of just the reporting, the cruise ship companies are required to tell us how many passengers visited each port in Alaska, and that is for disbursements, which I'll get into in just a moment here. The other function that the department does, as I stated, was that we are required to account for all of these monies that are collected, and then as directed by the legislature, we will disperse those funds. The initiative established, like I said, a new tax account within the general fund called the Commercial Passenger, actually it's called the Commercial Vessel Passenger Excise Tax Account. I didn't make a transposition here. This is actually the way this is referred to in the initiative. The tax is the Commercial Passenger Vessel Excise Tax, but the account is the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. So it does get a little bit confusing. As part of that account, there's a sub-fund that's called the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. And the way the initiative works is that 25% of all proceeds go into the sub-fund, into that Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, and the remaining 75% stays in the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. That's the way it works. So for each passenger that pays $46, $11.50 goes into the Impact Fund, and $34.50 stays in the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. During the 2007 cruise ship season, these are the actual revenues that we collected. We collected total revenue of $46.4 million. That was based on 1,010,245 passengers. In accordance with the initiative, 25% of that, the money that was collected, is now in the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, or $11.6 million, and the other 75% is in the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. Now, as I stated before, the gambling tax also is deposited to the Commercial Vessel Passenger Tax Account. Of course, we haven't had any filings or any payments of that tax right now. So currently, This, as I said, are the collections that we have received and the way these accounts are set up. The initiative has further language in it about how money from these accounts are supposed to be spent. But of course, everything is subject to appropriation by the legislature. The commercial vessel passenger tax account, which has, as I said, we deposited $34.8 million from the 2007 cruise ship season into that account. The disbursements are twofold from this account. The first is what we call the first five ports of call rule. The initiative says that the money is to be shared back with communities that are one of the first five ports of call on any given cruise ship voyage. Then again, the gambling tax revenue would be deposited into this account. There is no provision of sharing any of the gambling tax revenue back with the first five ports of call. So then any money that remains in the account after sharing it with the first five ports of call, this is directly from the initiative. It says that the legislature may appropriate money from this fund for state-owned port and harbor facilities, other services to properly provide for vessel or watercraft visits to enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce, and other lawful purposes. So it's kind of a, there is some guidance there on how these monies are expected to be spent. But again, it's our understanding, just based on the federal constitutional law and then other federal law, specifically the Marine Transportation, either Security or Safety Act that passed in 2000, is that the monies are supposed to be used to enhance the visit of cruise ship passengers. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the first five ports of call rule. That our original estimates were, well, originally the way the language in the initiative is it's $5 per passenger for the first five ports. And based on that, you would expect that $25 million would go back to the first five ports. But because of some restrictions in the way the initiative is written and just the way the cruise ship industry works, our estimate now is about $10 million each year of the $46 million will actually be distributed to the communities under this provision. And the reason for that is that most cruise ships don't visit five ports during a voyage, and most cruise ships visit Ketchikan and Juneau as part of each voyage, and neither of those communities is entitled to receive money under this specific provision. The port of call, actually, in order to receive money, you must be a municipality or a borough. So it can't be a private organization. If there's a private dock and there's a visit there, that private company cannot receive money under this provision. It must be a location where passengers embark or disembark, and that would include lightering passengers. So if you drop anchor outside of port and put passengers in smaller vessels and bring them to port, you would meet, your community would meet the definition of a port of call. And the next provision, where you cannot have your own passenger tax, as I said, both the City of Juneau and the City of Ketchikan do have their own marine passenger fees, which are similar to this tax, so they cannot participate in revenue sharing under this provision. However, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough can receive money under this provision because they are not unified with the City of Ketchikan. So they will share when disbursements are made from this account. If you receive funds under the first five port of call rule, the way the initiative reads is that you cannot also receive funds from the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, which is the sub-account that I talked about a little bit earlier. This next slide just shows how the revenue that we collected for the season, the number of passengers each month, and the amount of revenue associated with the monthly sailings. And again, it was over a million passengers, and we collected $46.4 million. I don't know if it need to go into this in any more detail. One of the just footnotes that I have here is if you look at May, it was $4.9 million, which we eventually collected for the sailings that were done during that month. However, only $3.8 million of the $4.9 was actually collected during fiscal year 2007. And I point that out because it's important as far as the way the appropriations or the disbursement for the first five ports of call happened this year. Basically, during the last legislative session, there was an appropriation in the fiscal year 2008 budget, and what that appropriation said was that the Department of Revenue was supposed to disperse funds to communities under the first five ports of call rule, but what we were supposed to disperse was any money that was collected in fiscal year 2007. So as I showed you in the previous slide, there was $4.9 million for the May filings, but only $3.8 of that was actually collected in fiscal year 2007. And we were a little surprised. We expected that we wouldn't collect any money in fiscal year 2007. The way our statutes read is that, as I said, if you have a May sailing, the money is supposed to be remitted to the department by the end of June, by June 30th. But June 30th, 2007, was Saturday, and our statutes say if it's a weekend, then the next business day, which would have been July 2nd, is when the tax is due. The majority of the cruise ship taxpayers paid ahead of time, so we were able to make disbursements to communities in 2008. And then, as I said, while we did make a disbursement to qualifying municipalities in December of 2007, I'll show you that breakout here in a second, and then we've collected an additional $42.6 million beginning July 1 through today, basically. And then any future disbursements, as I said, there's only been one appropriation that was in last year's budget, and so future disbursements, there must be an appropriation made by the legislature. These were the disbursements that were made in December of 2007 based on what we collected in May of 2007. So as you can see, Ketchikan Borough did receive money from as a first five port of call, but if you do the math, the 81,000 passengers, it's times 250. They only get 250 per passenger. The rest of the communities received $5. If you look at the Kenai Peninsula Borough and Seward, because Seward is not unified with the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the city of Seward received 250 per passenger, and then the borough also received 250 per passenger. And then the rest of these communities received $5 per passenger. And this was the total disbursement made out of the $3.8 million that we collected. I did an estimate of what would be dispersed to the first five ports based on the remaining money that we collected during fiscal year 2000, during the cruise ship season, the 2007 season, which runs from May through, actually I think there's a sailing in October, so May through October. So based on the number of passengers and the tax returns and the collections that we made, this is how we expect to distribute the rest of the money we received this year. And this doesn't, if there's an appropriation made that says that whatever is collected in fiscal year 2008 will be dispersed in 2009, we would not only disperse this money, but then any collections that we make for the or receive for the May sailings in 2008 would also be included. So this amount would go up. But right now, this is pretty close to the actual disbursement that will be made, provided there's an appropriation to the communities. So right now, as far as account balances, I'll just give you, you know, another overview of how this works. We have the total commercial vessel passenger tax account, the total amount that we collected for the the 2007 cruise ship season was $34.8 million. We dispersed the $744,000 to communities in December of 2007. We expect to disperse another 9.2 of the money that we collected to the communities, provided there's an appropriation, and that disbursement would take place October or November of 2009. And then what is remaining in the account is $24.8 million. And that is in the commercial vessel passenger tax account. This money has not been appropriated. And again, based on the initiative language, the $24.8 million, the initiative says, is to be used for state-owned port, harbor facilities, other projects, just to facilitate cruise ship visiting the passengers that come to Alaska. And then right now there's $11.6 million sitting in the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. So after the disbursements to the first five ports of call, there's $36.4 million right now that has not been appropriated for any projects or back to any communities that may have been impacted by cruise ship visitations. All right, I'm just doing one other quick recap here. I talked about that commercial vessel passenger tax account that has the $24.8 million. That's the remaining revenue that's not shared with the first five ports of call. And again, as I said, it can be used for state-owned harbor, port and harbor facilities and other services to provide for watercraft visits. You know, it's our understanding the funds can be used for state projects in specific communities. We are not tasked with drafting regulations and don't expect to draft regulations regarding this fund. And again, there was no appropriation has been made of this money. So at this point in time, like I said, there's $24.8 million that is available for these types of projects. And then there's the $11.6 million that is sitting in the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund. Again, disbursements must be appropriated by the legislature. The intent of the initiative is that this money is to go back to communities that are impacted by cruise ship visitors, not communities where the boats actually visited, because that's handled under the first five ports of call. So I guess the big question of the day and on everyone's mind is, you know, what's an impacted community? How can we disperse this money? Is it constitutional for us to disperse this money to those impacted communities? But this is the way the initiative is written, and this is the intent of the initiative. And again, the funds, like I said, can't go to the communities that receive money under the first five ports of call rule. However, it's my understanding, though, that in the other, what the amount that's remaining, that $24.8 million in the commercial vessel passenger tax account, can go to any community for projects that are cruise ship related to and just enhance the visits that are made there by those cruise ship passengers. So that is the end of my presentation. I hope I haven't confused you too much.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions, mm-hmm. if you'll indulge me.
Mm-hmm.
Authority or right do we have to audit the books of these guys?
Senator Dyson, through the chair. The Department of Revenue, we have complete authority to audit the books and records of any taxpayer that's required to remit taxes to us, so we can look at their books and records.
All right, and
do you have a follow-up, Senator Dyson?
I do.
Okay.
And you may be the wrong person to answer, but do you know, even in a cursory way, what the requirements are for these guys to follow our gambling laws when they're in state waters?
Basically what, I mean, it is, gambling is illegal in Alaska, but the...
Gambling is?
Gambling is illegal in Alaska.
Yes.
However, because the federal law allows gambling on cruise ships in marine waters, we can't prohibit it. It's still illegal. So the way it works is that they can't, well, and this is under the federal law. The federal law says that you can gamble in any waters outside of any state borders, but there is a specific provision in the federal law that says, however, you cannot gamble within 3 miles of any port in Alaska.
Okay.
So that's what the federal law says. Our laws say gambling is illegal. But because the federal government allows it, we can't preempt that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Elton.
Thanks. Just two quick questions, and you began getting to it, Ms. Bales, on the response to the previous question. But I still struggle with, I mean, what kind of capabilities the department has on, what kind of capabilities the department has in collecting the gambling tax? I mean, it seems to me that you're going to need some fairly specific information from the cruise lines to apply that tax, or which is going, and it will also require some people resources on your part, or you take on faith what is reported. I mean, how are you going to do that?
Senator Elton, through the chair. Any auditing any company and any tax type is problematic. I mean, you do have these same issues with everyone else. You ask for their books and records, and then you have to conduct certain tests to ensure that the books and records you've received are complete and accurate. I mean, it is a problem, but I don't see that this industry is any more difficult or poses any roadblocks more than any other industry, for example, that we audit. So we do the best we can with what we have, and actually we did receive some positions from the legislature last year to help us carry out these tasks. So that's really, you know, we just do the best we can, and we ask for the books and records, and also some third-party information. We can do that as well to verify.
Okay, thanks. And then, Mr. Chair, one additional question, and it's... I'm going to give you an assumption, and you can tell me whether or not my assumption is perhaps has any relationship to reality, and it's to set up a question for the next agency who is doing the cruise ship monitoring. And I'm anticipating that with the kind of national economy that we have, that it we could easily see cruise ship passengers decline in this cruise season, simply because this seems to be the kind of disposable income that, or it gets to the issue of disposable income, or even a person's notion of how much they should be spending, you know, in this kind of an economic climate. Is that, as a tax professional, can you tell me whether that notion is correct? And the reason I'm asking the question, and a heads up to DEC, is, I mean, they've got a contract with a company that is predicated on paying that contract based on the receipts that they get from a $4 component.
Senator Elton, through the chair. I think I can answer that question more just as a consumer than an accountant, and you would be right. I mean, any type of entertainment for any household, those are usually the first things that go when you're in a pinch. But, you know, as far as I know, as far for the cruise ship industry, I mean, Alaska's the premier destination now, and I guess, I mean, there can be an effect, you're right, if the economy, you know, takes a hit. But as far as cruise ship sailings go, that's my understanding. This is the premier destination, And if we're hit, then everyone else would be hit as well. So I it's hard to say.
We've been joined by Mr. Jerry Burnett. If you could introduce yourself, Jerry, yeah. And who you represent, and maybe you could help us with a response to the question.
For the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Director of Administrative Services and Legislation for the Department of Revenue. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to, Senator Elton through the chair, yesterday I had the opportunity to attend the Economic Forum at the Baranoff, and one of the important messages there was that the dollar has declined approximately 30% relative to the euro over the last couple of years, and that makes cruising in Alaska as a destination for people throughout the world much less expensive than it was last year or the year before. So there's a number of issues, not just the U.S. economy, but the world economy and the relative value of currencies that may support a continued use of Alaska as a cruise ship destination. So.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks.
The prediction is that it will continue.
Senator Hoffman, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund, have any communities come forward requesting reimbursement because they have been impacted by the cruise ship industry?
We have had some requests from some of the communities as far as how that money will work. But as far as providing specific projects, we haven't received any of those. But there have been discussions. And I attended the Southeast Conference in Skagway and gave a similar presentation there just to let the communities know what was available. And they said they would think about, you know, how they're impacted by cruise ship visitations. But again, we haven't received anything specific.
Ms. Bales, could you expand on that a little bit, what the department's going to do to help us sort through this issue? And maybe I misunderstood what you said earlier. I thought you said that there would be no regulations written. Could you elaborate on that to help?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We are not drafting regulations that deal with the commercial vessel passenger tax account, which is that remaining $24.8 million. And there wasn't anything in the initiative that would task us with doing that. There was language or is language in the initiative regarding the Regional Cruise Ship Impact Fund that says the department will draft regulations. To be honest with you, we have some concerns with that, primarily because we are a tax collection agency. Generally speaking, revenue departments don't collect the tax and then make decisions on how to spend it. And, you know, just from internal control procedures for any corporation, when you look at that, it's a bit confusing and also it's concerning to do that. However, and we have talked with Department of Law and explored just things that possibly can be done with this money. I mean, one of the things too, and I know that everyone here is aware of it, you have the cruise ship industry looking at the way the state's going to spend the money and the concerns that they have. You have the federal constitution, which puts prohibitions on that. But to have the Department of Revenue then draft regulations to try to deal with all of that is difficult at best.
And if I could add to that just one thing, in the FY08 budget, the legislature chose not to appropriate the impact fund monies to the department for disbursement. Only the $5 per head, or per passenger for the first five ports of call was appropriated to the department. So until that appropriation is made, and it is in the governor's budget for FY09, but until that appropriation is made, there's no urgency in our minds to complete those regulations.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are there cruise ship tours that have more than five ports of call?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, we are not, generally speaking, no. I think there's one cruise now that might be seven ports, a 14-day one, and I don't know if it actually had a sailing this past season. I don't think it did, but I've heard that there's one that's supposed to happen next year.
So if there were, it would seem that the other two ports would be impacted and could receive funds under this under this provision. The other question, I guess, is what other communities that are listed above and beyond that are listed in the ports of call in Southeast that could say that they're impacted? Do we have a list of those communities?
I'm Senator Hoffman through the chair. We don't have a list of those communities. We haven't compiled anything like that. But, I mean, it's my understanding from reading the initiative language is that the impacted communities or anyone, I mean, let's say, for instance, you bus people from a specific port up to Fairbanks. I mean, is Fairbanks impacted by just the mass numbers of cruise ship visitors, you know, coming to their community? I mean, those are questions that need to be answered, and, you know, in light of just the restrictions, like I said, constitutional restrictions, federal law restrictions, and but no, we haven't put together a list of communities that potentially could have been impacted. But I would guess even outside of Ketchikan, the
Saxman,
yes, thank you, could say that they're impacted. I mean, even though they don't have a port, they do have a significant amount of visitors that come there. And again, that's the intent of this initiative, is to help those communities out.
In that example, Saxman has a substantial amount of bus traffic that comes off of the port of Ketchikan, and they're driven to Saxman, visit the totem poles and the community center.
Mm-hmm.
There's a more direct impact, but clearly the earlier question you have we need to sort out is other impacts in the metropolitan areas around the state due to bus traffic, train traffic, or what have you.
Right.
And if I might add, we have been contacted by unincorporated areas and native villages that are not formally municipalities or boroughs in the state of Alaska, but who are impacted, and there's a question whether those types of groups should be included in this.
Senator Hoffman.
Regarding the other fund, the commercial vessel passenger tax account fund and the $25 million, the first item says that it can be used for state-owned ports and harbors, and over the last 5 to 10 years, the state of Alaska has been transferring ownership of ports and harbors to local governments. Do we have a list of the remaining ones that are owned by the state of Alaska, ports and harbors?
Yes, Senator Hoffman, through the chair, we don't currently, but we can compile a list with the help of DOT.
Yes, that list is available. We have any other questions? I think on the second, then I'll get right to you, Senator Thomas. Back to the earlier question on the ports, we'll have the DOT come forward with a list of the harbors that have been transferred, the ones that are targeted to be transferred, and then there's a lot of small other docks that they're struggling with how to deal with those. Senator Thomas, you have a question.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the regulations that are out for public comment, how did you develop since gambling is illegal in the state, how did you develop the proposed regulations? By other states or U.S. regulations? Or
Senator Thomas, through the chair. We developed those regulations just in line with every other tax program we have of what information we would need to properly administer this tax. And I mean, if I may, it's kind of, this is something that keeps coming up, and everyone says, well, you have this illegal activity and yet we're taxing it, and there's concerns about whether or not that makes that activity legal. And I like to just tell everyone, you know, that Al Capone was a famous tax evader. And the stuff that he did, I mean, was illegal, and the fact that the IRS taxed him didn't make those the stuff that he did legal. It just was that he was supposed to pay tax. And even in the current Internal Revenue Code, any type of illegal activity from which you have income from, you are required to report that income and pay tax. It doesn't then make that activity legal. So I think we're in the same situation here. The fact that we're taxing it doesn't make it legal, and we are just administering this like we do every other program.
We might have to expand the Ocean Ranger duties. One other question.
Go ahead, Senator Thomas.
What is expected that the communities that are impacted, what is the process that they would follow to?
Well, Senator Thomas, through the chair, that's an excellent question, because we've struggled with that one. Like I've said, Department of Revenue, we're a revenue collection agency. We don't have the expertise to make those determinations. And one of the things we thought about doing by regulation was giving that responsibility to the Department of Community and Economic Development, maybe providing money through a grant program. We found out from a Department of Law we cannot give responsibility to another agency through regulation. It has to be done by statute. So our problem is that we don't have the expertise to determine viable projects. I mean, we're accountants, we're not engineers, that type of thing. And so, I mean, that's an excellent question. Like I said, we've struggled with it.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Another question on the language in the, as it relates to other projects, state projects. It says, is that the language? And it does it have the word specific communities in there, in the language?
I'm Senator Hoffman, through the chair. No, it doesn't. But our understanding is that it can be shared with specific communities. So, I mean, let's say, for instance, Ketchikan Borough is receiving money under the first five ports of call. The city of Ketchikan has its own marine passenger fee, but apparently DOT does quite a bit of work down there, projects to divert traffic, street lights, and improving sidewalks, all of those types of things. And those projects are a result of just the million people that come through that community each year. So again, we believe that money can be spent on projects such as those.
The industry, are they working with the departments to some form of a agreed upon distribution, or giving you what they're comfortable with?
Mr. Chair, we have had some dialogue with the industry. It's been very limited. When we first looked at, tried to get a lot of information on this tax, we talked to the city of Juneau. They actually, through their city ordinance, have established a task force which includes members of the industry to approve projects, look at a list of projects and say, yes, this would be good, this, we don't want this project, or this would be viable. And then that committee puts together a list and they give it to the assembly there in Juneau. And that's worked very well for Juneau. And that's probably not a bad idea for the state to do. Unfortunately, it can't be done by regulation. It has to be done by statute. So we're kind of in a situation where we probably need some statutory fixes in order to facilitate spending this money, and working with the industry is probably not a bad idea.
Senator Elton, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chair, and kind of a follow-up to Senator Thomas's question and the line of questioning by Senator Hoffman. Does the initiative prohibit the distribution of money to other state governmental entities? And I'm thinking perhaps of a situation in which a community may want to put in, add electrical power at the dock to reduce emissions, and that money may be flowing through ADA, for example. I mean, does the initiative allow appropriations to ADA to finance those kinds of projects?
Senator Elton, through the chair, we believe that there's a possibility for those types of things, provided that they do enhance those watercraft visits.
Okay, and another example, what about DOT? If it's a DOT port, the initiative allows distribution of money to the State Department of Transportation.
Yes, Senator Elton, through the chair, yes. And last year, we did have a list of projects in several southeast communities that were given to us by DOT, and it was, like I said, Ketchikan, Haines, Skagway, sidewalk improvements, bike trails, for, yes, and to appropriate money to DOT to do those projects, we believe is a proper use of that money.
And through the chair, Senator Elton, that would, for that money in the cruise ship passenger vessel fund, commercial passenger vessel fund would require legislative appropriation to those. It's not something that we can do by regulation if it's the money is in the Department of Revenue.
And then I guess the last follow-up question is, so there are a couple of ways of distributing the money to communities. One would be through a state agency. The other would be a direct grant approved by the legislature to a community.
To the chair, Senator Elton, at this point, under the regulation, we could share that, and the impact fund money could be shared directly without a specific appropriation if the money were appropriated to the Department of Revenue, as the initiative says. We're concerned about that because we don't know how we're going to do that, and the Department of Revenue also lacks grant authority. So while we can share revenues, we can't put conditions on how that revenue is spent or what the purpose of that revenue.
We'll take a brief at ease.
So what I'm hearing, Mr. Chair, is that the legislature could do a capital appropriation to a community that doesn't need to be laundered through a state agency.
To the chair, Senator Elton, yes, that's correct.
At this table,
that's our understanding.
We'll avoid the verbiage of money laundering. We don't have money here at the finance table.
We don't
do
that.
We may direct it through a state agency or for clarity and transparency, but we're just 1 second, Senator Huggins, and I'll get your question. There is an interest, I think Juno already plugs in, there is an interest in Ketchikan and plugging in the cruise ships to lower the emissions and put them on hydro. So I know that's a fairly large capital issue in both those two communities, both Juno and Ketchikan, and both of them have the issue of the offset.
Senator Stedman, if I could comment on that, we have had internal discussions about whether this money could be used to support a bond issue for a larger capital project, and I believe there's ways that could be legitimately done also.
Okay. You know, so. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. This sitting here thinking, this sounds strangely like an emerging rail belt energy fund, which has, there have been appropriations for the last 2 years that were vetoed, appears to me to have some of the same traits.
That's a good observation. We'll try to work with the administration and the industry and other stakeholders so we have a smooth process here. But clearly we have some questions to sort through and issues. Any other questions? Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next presentation. And thank you very much for coming forward, and we'll be getting back to you with questions and as we sort this out. Next, we're going to have a presentation by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Ms. Lynn Kent, Director of the Division of Water Quality. You could please, ladies, state your names, both your names and who you represent for the record, and then go ahead and go through your presentation, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Kent. I'm the director for the Division of Water at Department of Environmental Conservation, and with me this morning is Laura Beeson. Laura is the deputy director of our Division of Admin Services. We appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning and talk to you about another fee associated with the Citizens Initiative. As you well know, it was adopted in the fall of 2006. That initiative also affected the operations at DEC. Thank you. as well as imposing an additional fee. So just by way of a little bit of background, Section 7 of the Citizens Initiative, and that's found at AS 4603476, requires DEC implementation of a new Ocean Ranger program. These are Coast Guard licensed marine engineers. It's their job to be on board vessels entering Alaska waters and to monitor vessel compliance with both state and federal requirements for wastewater discharge, other environmental rules, and health and sanitation and safety practices on board the vessels. The new fee is found at Section 8 of the new law. That's at AS 4603480, D as in dog. It imposes a $4 per berth fee on all large commercial passenger vessels, and that fee is designed to run the Ocean Ranger program. That section of the law also states that the Ocean Ranger program is subject to legislative appropriation. Under the law, the existing law that we had prior to the Citizens Initiative, the large cruise ships that are subject to this tax are defined as a commercial passenger vessel that provides overnight accommodations for 250 or more passengers for hire, determined with reference to the number of lower berths. So we have a little bit different definition there than I believe the other portions of the Citizens Initiative. Just by way of background, last cruise ship season there were 27 large commercial passenger vessels that made regular visits to Alaska. There were a couple vessels that made one or two visits to Alaska. The bulk of the Ocean Ranger fees then were paid by the major cruise ship companies. That's Carnival, Celebrity, Holland America, Norwegian, Princess, Regent Seven Seas, and Royal Caribbean. Excuse me. In terms of how that process is working for collection of the fees, under the pre-existing law, the cruise ship companies were required to register their vessels with the state early in the calendar year. And during that registration, they provide information to DEC on the size of their vessels and the number of planned voyages to Alaska. And we use that information then to calculate what the Ocean Ranger fee will be for that particular company and vessel. They are generally invoiced in April for all of their planned voyages for the coming cruise ship season. There are occasional adjustments later on in the year. For instance, if a planned voyage is canceled for whatever reason, the billing may change for that particular company. But the fee is collected by DEC, and it's deposited into the Commercial Passenger Vessel Environmental Compliance Fund, which was, a pre-existing fund. And the fees are deposited into that fund in the calendar, in the fiscal year in which they're collected. And as you could probably tell from the last presenter, it's a bit of a challenge for us sometimes to keep in mind the difference between the cruise ship season, which is kind of a calendar year orientation, and our fiscal year, which cuts right in the middle of that cruise ship season. In terms of revenue from that new fee, that $4 fee for Ocean Rangers, in FY07 we collected about $3.8 million. We're projecting in FY08 to collect about $4 million. And our projection right now for FY09 is also about $4 million. We understood that you were interested in appropriations to date from that fund for the Ocean Ranger program. The legislature did appropriate in FY07 $124,700. And the current appropriation, legislative appropriation for FY08 is $1.2 million. Our governor's FY09 requested budget is for $3.8 million. That's the $1.2 million base plus an increment of about $2.6 million. Our plan is to request additional authorization from the Commercial Passenger Vessel Environmental Compliance Fund in the governor's amended budget up to the amount of the projected revenues. I understand that the committee has an interest in how the program has been running so far. In 2007, that was our first season implementing the Ocean Ranger program. We called that kind of a transitional year so that we could learn about what it would take to actually run an Ocean Ranger program that is unprecedented in our country or even around the world. So our transitional program, we put environmental professionals on board the vessels early in the season. Their job was to begin to look at the different types of things that Ocean Rangers would need to look at on board the vessels, because the Citizens Initiative is very expansive in terms of looking at environmental health, sanitation, and safety issues on board the vessels. They also began to develop checklists for the Ocean Rangers to use while they're doing their observations. And we also began to look at what kinds of training needs we would have for the Ocean Rangers. Later in the season, we added some Coast Guard licensed marine engineers to the mix, again, to refine the checklist and also, most importantly, to refine the types of training those types of individuals with Coast Guard marine licenses would need to have in order to serve the Ocean Ranger functions that are required under the Citizens Initiative. Last year, we were able to visit all 27 of the cruise ships that regularly call in Alaska, and we were on portions of 114 voyages. The Ocean Ranger program approach, we've had to kind of come at from a lot of different angles. The new law is very specific. It requires Ocean Rangers to be on board vessels entering Alaska waters. So last season, we evaluated what kinds of approaches we could take to meet the letter of that law. And the two that we really looked at that meet the letter of the law are an approach similar to the pilot boats, where as the vessel is coming close to the border and hitting Alaskan waters, we would run the Ocean Ranger out to that vessel so they could be on board the vessel when it's entering Alaska waters. The other option that we looked at would be to put the Ocean Ranger on board the vessel in Seattle or Vancouver, the point of origin, so that they could be on board the vessel already when it enters Alaskan waters. And it turns out that that's a much more cost-effective approach. Of course, when we do that, the Ocean Ranger doesn't have any authority to do anything or to do observations until the vessel hits Alaskan waters. The projected fee revenue of $4 million per year is not sufficient to provide that kind of full voyage coverage on board every vessel that comes to Alaska. That would take over $5 million to do that. So our plan has been to implement the program to the fullest extent possible based on the legislative appropriations. So in order to do that, we could do full rides on some percentage of the voyages and have no presence on other voyages, or we could look at a different kind of mix of different types of observations that would give us some type of presence on board every voyage. We looked at four different types of observations. One is this full voyage where the Ocean Ranger gets on board the vessel in Seattle or Vancouver and rides all the way back to Seattle or Vancouver. Again, that's what we call the full ride and definitely meets the letter of the law. The second type of observation could be to have the Ocean Ranger get on board at the first Alaskan port and off at the last Alaskan port. The third method of observation could be to have the Ocean Ranger ride from one Alaskan port to the next Alaskan port. And then the fourth, and probably the least desirable, is to have the Ocean Ranger do only an in-port inspection. Moving on to FY08, during FY08, we've used a portion of the $1.2 million appropriation to pay for the end of the last cruise ship season, so July through September, that portion of the transitional ramp-up program that we've been conducting. With the remaining funds, we could take one of a couple different approaches for the remainder of this fiscal year, which runs into the start of the next cruise ship season. We could hire, train, and equip 10 Ocean Rangers and have them provide a mix of observations, the different types of observations. And doing that, we could probably visit about 68, 70 of the boats of the 200 voyages that are planned for that part of the cruise ship season. Alternatively, they could complete 170 import-only observations on those 200 voyages. Again, probably not the optimal method. So that's what could be done with the current authorization of $1.2 million. With FY08 funding up to the amount of the anticipated receipts, we could conduct full voyage observations on those first 200 voyages that are planned for the remainder of this current fiscal year. The only exception to that might be for the very expensive long itinerary type voyages where we would have to use one of the other methods to do the observations.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the end of the budgetary process last year, there was questions as to whether or not the $1.2 million that was authorized for the 08 budget was adequate. And I was wondering if it is adequate or is there required a supplemental for that program?
Yes, Senator Hoffman, through the chair, the funding is not adequate to meet the letter of the law to have an Ocean Ranger on board every vessel entering Alaskan waters, and we are contemplating the option for supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Elton.
To follow up that question, I mean, if in fact you're considering a supplemental, I mean, do you are there dollars in the fund that can be appropriated? I mean, we appropriated $1.2 million. I mean, how much did that leave in the fund for 08?
Senator Elton, through the chair, there's sufficient balance in the fund to appropriate up to the amount of the fee receipt. I don't have the balance handy.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The engineers that are monitoring the effluent, are they sampling?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the existing regulations for the cruise ship companies require them to conduct self-monitoring of their wastewater discharge and to report the results to DEC. The Citizens Initiative also had another provision that requires us to issue a wastewater discharge permit to the vessels. So what we had prior to the initiative was regulations that required them to monitor their effluent. This coming cruise ship season, they'll be doing that same monitoring under a permit. DEC does have resources in our proposed budget to do independent monitoring of their effluent as well.
If I may follow up, go ahead.
So the engineers themselves, our guys, are occasionally taking samples independently to verify the quality of the sampling done by the company?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, last cruise ship season, DEC had that responsibility. We did not have our transitional program with the environmental professionals and the marine engineers conducting environmental monitoring, no sampling by those people.
You have additional follow-up? Senator Dyson?
Did you say yes? That they are independently taking samples to be processed independently?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this Ocean Ranger have a Craftsman toolbox that he takes on with tool bag supplemented by a Canon camera? Or how would I recognize this person?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, the Ocean Rangers will they will not be carrying tools and tinkering with any of the equipment on board the vessels. Their responsibility is to observe the practices of the vessel operators while they're on board.
Follow up. Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, so they're just watching is what you said there. That
primarily. And
so
then
they don't sample.
I want that job.
I mean, if they're just watching.
Senator Huggins, that the permit that's required requires self-monitoring, just as every other wastewater discharge permittee has to do their own self-monitoring. That gets reported to DEC. We review those results. We also conduct independent third-party monitoring of the vessels using DEC staff.
Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, thank you. And I would like to see the results of that just as a comment. But the other has to, as it applies to our ferry system, is the ferry system outside of this provision? Do we just do it because it's smart business sense, or we just don't want to do it because it will cost us additional money? What category do we fall in?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, the cruise ship company is covered by the ferry system is covered by some of the commercial passenger vessel requirements and not others. For instance, they don't pay the $4 per fee $4 per berth Ocean Ranger fee, but they are subject to monitoring requirements and reporting that information to DEC.
Go ahead.
Just for clarification, are Ocean Rangers riding on ferries?
No. Okay. So thank you. I can remember.
Yeah. Just a final comment. I mean, if this is a good program, I mean, why we wouldn't want to look at large passenger carrying vehicles? Anyway, just comment. Thank you.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the relationship between, I think on the radio today, the contractor selected was Crowley Marine, and the unions and the potential impact that may fall back to the state, or is the state involved in all the negotiations?
Mr. Chairman, the department has just completed a long process to select a contractor to provide the Ocean Ranger services. Again, these are Coast Guard licensed marine engineers. Crowley, I believe, is working primarily with a union that is based in Florida, I don't recall the name of the union, to recruit and train those Ocean Rangers. I understand there have been some conversations between them and the Alaska Union that provides marine engineers here, but I don't know the results of those conversations.
And then the Ocean Ranger, when he or she is working 14-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts, 8-hour shifts, what do they do with the rest of their time, and how is that, and how is their berthing and meals and all that stuff dealt with?
All right, Senator Stedman, they are considered a paying passenger on board the vessel, so they are in passenger berths. And during their off time, that is their off time. We're still working with Crowley in terms of what the actual work day might look like. It might not be a solid block of time. They may work for certain specific periods of time when particular operations are going on in the vessel that we want to make sure they're observing. So we're still working out those kinds of details.
I'll get right to you here, Senator Thomas. Is the Ocean Rangers and DC employees all the same thing, or are they separate, or what?
Mr. Chairman, they're separate. They are a contractor to DEC. They provide observations and then report back to DEC. They have no independent enforcement authority. They don't determine whether something is in compliance or not. Their responsibility is to report back to us.
And we have some fairly high-end cruise ships that come and visit our state, and we have some more moderately priced for folks like us to ride on. How is the Ocean Rangers system going to run with those types if they're going to be treated as passengers? You know, do you want to eat filet mignon or spaghetti? How are you guys going to deal with that?
Mr. Chairman, we're actually leaving it up to the contractor to do the logistics of scheduling which Ocean Rangers go on board which vessels. I imagine that the Ocean Rangers will be on board different vessels on different voyages.
And will we have the employee base, or the labor pool, I should say, the labor pool in Alaska to facilitate those occupations, or are we going to have to import them from Florida or some other higher populated area along the coast?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's the obligation of our contractor to provide the Ocean Rangers, the Coast Guard licensed marine engineers, and they'll recruit those from the union, I presume, that they normally work with, which is out of Florida. I don't know if they will also hire members here.
Okay. Senator Thomas, and then Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize the need to monitor people that are doing their own monitoring, so to speak, because we have a lot of those systems in place in the state, and sometimes they fail. Even at Prudhoe Bay is a good example of one of those. But is there some move afoot to try and maybe have a more effective process of capturing samples and assuring their security or something like that, so we don't have people? I know that I'm sure I've already had people say, geez, we send people to Seattle, they're going to get on a boat. And I realize the law says from entering the waters, but, and excuse my ignorance, I'm not sure what the difference in the effluent can be going through the same system, because I'm not aware of the chemicals and things that are used for treatment and how much could be put into it to clarify it more. But it would be a very contrived system where somebody would say, okay, once we get to this point, we have to change our system. Which seems like keeping employees to secrecy of not being whistleblowers or something like that, employees of the cruise line saying, oh, we, We do this on a regular basis. As soon as we get to Alaskan waters, we change our process or something. I don't think you'd keep that quiet. So I guess the question is, are we looking at something that might potentially be much simpler and much cheaper to establish what takes place on those boats when they not only enter Alaskan waters, but from the time they leave Seattle to the time they get back to Seattle or Vancouver, wherever they're going?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, again, we don't have any authority when the boat is not in Alaskan waters. Because the fee revenue that is generated is not sufficient to have the Ocean Ranger on board for the full voyage, and if there's not additional money, we do have to look at some sort of mix of observation. So if an Ocean Ranger can't get on board the vessel, excuse me, until it hits the first Alaskan port, well, it's already been in Alaska waters for a little while. So one of the things that we're planning for this summer is a pilot project to look at remote monitoring. So right now, under the Citizens Initiative, we're required to track the location of vessels. They have to report every hour the vessel location when it's in Alaskan waters, and we have the ability to do that. What we'll be testing is the ability to add to that system remote monitoring of when they are opening and closing wastewater discharge valves, and that would allow us to cover potentially, at least for that part of the Citizens Initiative requirements, the vessel's discharges when it's in Alaskan waters, but there might not be an Ocean Ranger on board.
Just a short follow-up. That sounds like a good idea, because I know that within the trucking industry, they're able to track their trucks and the RPMs of the engine, where the truck was shut off, and I realize it's a different kind of system, but there are the opportunities that exist to develop things that make that simpler. And also, are the Ocean Rangers, do they travel for free, say if they got on in Seattle and went through, are they free gratis? Is the cruise ship required to transport those people for nothing, and food and lodging, et cetera?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, no, we have to purchase the berth, and we have to purchase the berth for the entire voyage if we're going to use it for part of the voyage.
Okay.
So they are considered a paying passenger.
Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two additional questions on the contract with Crowley. And this is difficult because of the issue of our fiscal year not being in alignment with the cruise ship season. But Crowley seems to suggest that the cost for calendar year 09 of the contract is going to be $4.4 million. And the governor's request for fiscal year 09 is $3.8 million. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, I mean, even with the issue of the cruise season being divided by the fiscal year, the $3.8 million may not be sufficient if Crowley's expectation for a cruise season, even though it's across fiscal years, is in the neighborhood of $4.4 million. So I guess I'm trying to get to the issue of whether or not there's going to need to, with Crowley's numbers, whether or not there's going to need to be a supplemental that maybe is in two fiscal years of $300,000 apiece, or in one fiscal year of $600,000.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that number that I'm assuming you're looking at the response that they gave to our request for proposal, was based on a certain mix of what Lynn spoke about with the different methods of getting on the boat, whether it's a full ride or port to port or whatnot. That was like a scenario that was given to them. What we anticipate doing and are doing now is negotiating a contract that takes the mix of those different scenarios and builds in up to what we anticipate the revenue for that fund to be for that year. So that was like a snapshot that we gave them in responding to that request for proposal. That doesn't mean that's going to be the set cost for that year, because we have the ability to adjust it on the different scenarios that we'll be applying.
Okay, so you're in the process now of negotiating those kind of accommodations?
Yes.
Okay. The second question on the contract is, one of the things that Crowley seems to suggest is that their costs could go down if they're successful in negotiating super-saving berths or some other kind of negotiation. I mean, the question that arises in my mind is what's the incentive, you know, for if there's a mandate that this service be provided? I mean, what's the incentive for the cruise ships for reducing berth costs? I mean, why would they want to negotiate with Crowley and negotiate down their profits?
Through the chair, Senator Elton. Realistically, there probably is no incentive except for the possibility that we're guaranteeing a passenger, if you will, on a multitude of trips. But in reality, there is no incentive for them to negotiate any kind of lower rate than they would pay, than John Smith on the street would pay.
Okay, and a follow-up to that question, I mean, was there a decision made that they would pay for a passenger berth rather than a crew berth?
Senator Elton, through the chair, in discussions with Department of Law and the cruise ship companies, both of those indicated that we needed to pay for a passenger berth rather than a crew berth because they're not a member of the ship's crew.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the four methods of potential implementation, is it correct to say that any one of these four methods would meet the intent of the initiative?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, because the initiative language says that the cruise ship is required to have an ocean ranger on board a vessel entering Alaska waters, if they're not on board when the ship crosses the border, they're probably not meeting the letter of the law. They may be meeting the intent of the law, but...
Then which of these four methods, or three methods, or two methods, or one method complies with the intent of the law? All of them comply?
The first method, where we would put the Ocean Ranger on board in Seattle or Vancouver and have them ride the full voyage, meets the letter of the law. The Ocean Ranger would be on board the vessel when it's entering Alaskan waters.
And the second method?
The second method, they would not board the vessel until it hits the first Alaskan port. So it would not be on board the vessel. The Ocean Ranger would not be on board the vessel when it's entering Alaska waters.
And the third method?
Senator Hoffman, the same situation. They would not be on board the vessel when it's entering Alaska waters. Rather, they would be riding from one port to the next.
Would not meet the letter of the law?
Probably not. Well, Senator Hoffman, our interpretation of the law is that the Ocean Ranger is supposed to be on board the vessel when it's entering Alaska waters.
And the fourth method?
Also not.
So, if they're entering Alaskan waters, could they get on in Seattle and get off after they enter Alaska waters and get off at the first port?
Senator Hoffman, we've been interpreting that language to mean that they need to be on board the vessel entering Alaska waters and that they should stay on board the vessel while it's in Alaskan waters, although the language is not specific to that.
If it's not specific to that, how did you come to that conclusion?
Through the chair, I think because it's a new initiative, and of course there are always little kinks to be worked out. We were looking at more what the intent of this, what this initiative was, and that was to have us monitor the activities that these vessels were doing. I guess it was a common sense conclusion that the intent was to have us closely monitor throughout the voyage of Alaska, not just at the moment they entered the waters and then exit the first available port or whatever.
And can you provide this committee with the cost of implementing each one of these methods?
Senator Hoffman, we can do that. If you're curious about the cost of the program to have all of the Ocean Rangers board in Seattle or Vancouver and ride the full voyage, that's we're estimating that at about $5.4 million per year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is an addition. I think there was one option about the lighter meeting up with, or the pilot boat meeting up with them, right south of Dixon entrance. That was apparently ruled out, or what's the status of that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we looked at the cost of that option, and that happened to be the most expensive option. So putting them on board in Seattle or Vancouver meets the letter of the law and is much safer and relatively cheaper.
Just one little brief note. Earlier, or about 10 minutes ago, you mentioned that you can get the location of the ship every hour when we're talking about automating valves or whatever. I think there's a technology in place now that can monitor it virtually by the minute, speed and distance. And if we were to have the ability sometime in the future to monitor all of the discharge valves, we'd know precisely where and when those valves were opened. Senator Thomas.
No, I'm agreeing with you, I think.
Senator Ellen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Lynn. I mean, given the questions that were asked by Senator Hoffman and your responses about what options align with the law, I mean, given the different options you're studying, I mean, are you also looking at statutory changes that would bring the law into alignment with options that you may be using or suggesting?
Senator Elton, through the chair, the administration is not considering any changes right now to the law to accommodate that. We're operating under the terms of the law that says that the Ocean Ranger is subject to legislative appropriation and trying to design the most credible program that fits within the amount appropriated by the legislature.
Senator Hoffman, I'm just curious about the law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But the law does not say that the Ocean Ranger has to be on the vessel as it exits Alaskan waters.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, no, the vessel or the law is silent on that.
So that would seem to me that he does not have to be on there and can potentially exit after he comes through and get off at the midway point, because you're setting up a program that's quite expensive and doing something that the law does not require.
Yeah. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, within the available resources that have been appropriated to us, we're trying to, best we can, meet the letter and the intent of the law, and we believe the intent of the law was to have that observer on board while the vessel is in Alaskan waters.
But it does not say that he has to be on board exiting Alaskan waters.
That's correct.
I'm under the impression with the conversation with the commissioner that the department was going to implement as much as they could for the funds available without asking for additional funds. Is that not the position of the department, and it's still in flux, or kind of where are we at there?
Mr. Chairman, our intent is to, again, operate the most credible program we can with the amounts appropriated, and the 09 budget request, we will be seeking the amount of revenue that's generated by the Ocean Ranger fee in order to operate the program. So we're seeking to have all of those fees available to us to run the program.
When the department's looked at this, have they taken the step to look at what the cost would be to have devices in place to monitor valve opening and closing? After, I recognize there's a two-year provision here before we can really get in and start working on this and smooth things out. The issue is discharge, and the state knowing when and if there is a discharge and what was discharged. Have you taken those steps forward?
Mr. Chairman, we have not costed out that kind of an option yet. Like I said, we'll be running a pilot program this summer to look at the technology that's available and the feasibility of doing that, and we can certainly evaluate the costs of doing that. That would help with the wastewater discharge, but recall that the Ocean Ranger's responsibilities kind of go beyond wastewater discharge to look at health and safety and sanitation practices and other environmental issues that are on board the vessel, like solid waste and hazardous waste and the kitchen galley, et cetera.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good question and a good observation, and would note, and we had a brief conversation about this at the subcommittee table last night, that there was an appropriation to the Alaska Marine Exchange, which right now is monitoring vessel speeds, vessel location for vessels ranging from every state ferry down to kayaks at the Boy Scout camp. And there was money appropriated that I anticipate is going to be get us right to some of the questions about how you use that technology coupled with electronic monitoring devices on valves and other things. My impression is that's not being done through DEC, that's being done outside of DEC?
Yeah, Senator, out through the chair, it's my understanding that that appropriation is partially aimed at providing coverage in areas that are blind spots right now to that system. We've also contracted with the Marine Exchange, and they are the ones who are providing the vessel location information to us right now.
Thank you. We have any other final questions while we wrap up for the floor? Okay, Senator Hoffman.
One final question. You gave a report on the collections, and there are two, I guess, the Carnival Spirit and one other one that did not pay the amount that was invoiced, and I was wondering why that was.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that was simply an internal billing problem. It was by no means the an issue with the particular cruise ship companies. They've just recently been billed and have every intention of paying.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other final questions? Well, we thank you for your presentation, and we look forward to working with the administration to meet not only the intent but the letter of the law on this issue, and as we go forward to still facilitate the intent of the people and the initiative, but to do what we can to lower the cost and through automation or whatever ingenuities we can come up with. I think there is concern considering donut holes and other things in Southeast and discharge issues. So it is a fairly sensitive issue when we get into some of the our environmental issues here. Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., we're going to take up Senate Bill 119, School Library Grants. There will be a discussion of that bill. And we're going to take Senate Joint Resolution 14, Budget Reserve Fund Vote Requirement. So we'll see everybody back here Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Meeting adjourned.